what do you see as the correct approach to handling the federal budget and deficit?
Well, when it comes to the federal budget and deficit, it's going to take a combination of things. I mean, the idea that we can simply cut our way out of the deficit is not realistic. It's, in fact, impossible. But the idea that we don't need to cut at all is also unrealistic. So I think it's going to be a balanced approach of, you know, having to make some tough decisions. Over the last, frankly, 5 or 10 years, you've seen the federal budget explode. And so, you know, we can begin to pare it back in all the areas, and also at the same time, try to get people back to work. When you get people back to work, and it's not more federal programs, it's frankly the federal government getting out of the way in many cases, you'll take people from receiving tax benefits to taxpayers. So that's a two-for-one. And the other big thing is this. We have to have grown-up adult conversations with the American people about how Social Security and Medicare are unsustainable at the current growth rate. And so what are we going to do for younger generations in order to ensure that we preserve them for current seniors, those in or nearing retirement? Those are serious conversations that have to happen, and the longer we go without having those conversations, the more drastic, frankly, the cuts are going to end up being.
You mentioned Medicare, and of course, we're one proposal that's been put out is Congressman Paul Ryan's Medicare plan, which involves turning the program, or at least slowly transitioning the program, into a voucher system. Do you support that?
Well, I have voted for it, and it doesn't turn it into a voucher. It's a premium support network, and with what happens in the latest proposal, it actually had a pretty left-wing senator actually co-sponsor it, and it's also the same program that, frankly, a working group under the Clinton administration proposed. It allows you to stay on the current Medicare system, or you can have insurance compete for your business, and it's going to be a Medicare-administered, basically, plan with minimum benefits that are equivalent to Medicare. And you can take better above that, or you can take even below it if you want, but you're guaranteed the support for basically the current Medicare, what it provides you. And what that's going to do is, same thing it did in Medicare Advantage, is when insurance starts competing for the business, it actually comes in way under cost. And we see that Advantage actually has cost about 40% of what the congressional budget, CBO actually estimated it would cost. So this is one way to begin to save it. But, you know, even Bill Clinton, at his speech to the Democrat National Committee, said that in 10 years, Medicare is bankrupt. He said in 2022, it's out of money. So I think it's time we have to start doing something. So if you don't agree with that plan, I think it's time that you put forward a plan of your own. I say this to the president, and we can hash these out and get to a real solution.
I want to turn now to jobs. What kind of jobs would you like to see created in your district?
I'd like to see good, high-paying jobs. And I'll tell you, one of the areas where the district's taken a big hit is in manufacturing. We've seen manufacturing go overseas. We've seen it close up shop here at home for a number of reasons. Manufacturers aren't leaving because the weather's warmer somewhere else and they just want to leave the United States. They're leaving because we live in a global economy now. 95% of the consumers in the world live outside of the United States. So if we want to be able to sell to those consumers, we have to understand that we've got to create good products that are priced within the market compared to other countries. And right now, you have the highest corporate tax rate in the free world. You have regulations being imposed on these companies that are requiring them to hire a lot of people just to comply with regulations, which adds to cost. And, you know, look, from a labor perspective, we're equal with a lot of other countries that are very competitive with us. And one of the things we have going for us, frankly, is cheap natural gas. That helps us, and we've seen a lot of manufacturing come back. So between energy, reducing the amount of regulations, but ensuring we have regulations, we need them, and getting a corporate tax code that makes sense, these are all positive steps to creating the environment that's going to allow manufacturing to come back here and thrive. And also, other jobs, too. We're a very energy-intensive district. There's going to be a lot of people employed in the energy sector. Energy is so important to the future of our country, and it provides good, high-paying jobs for middle-class Americans, and I'd love to see energy continue to grow and thrive.
I wonder if you could give me some more specifics about how the federal government could or what role the federal government could play in creating these high-paying jobs.
Well, it's a couple of things. Number one, over the last 20 years, there's been this idea that if the federal government spends more money, more jobs are going to be created, and we actually see that that's not the case. It'll create government jobs, but government jobs aren't job creation. It's jobs that are made by, you know, tax resources. But what the government can do is understand that we're the most powerful country in the world right now, and we're the most powerful country in the world because of the free market and because of the individuals that have come here whether they're immigrants or whether, you know, they're second, third, fourth generation immigrants or they've been here forever, that have come here with an idea, though, and basically said, you know what, I've got an idea, I'm going to put it to action, and I'm going to hire people. And that's why we have a very powerful economy. When the government steps in the way of that and begins to tinker with the free market in a big way, it really stifles job creation and job innovation. So I think the best role we can play is to create a free and a fair environment, so, you know, ensuring there's nobody doing anything unethical or illegal, but then really allowing the free market to be the free market.
I'd like to turn to labor management relations.
Okay.
What is your position on right-to-work laws?
Well, I don't support a federal right-to-work law because I believe that's a state issue, and so I think that's something that each state should debate within their states. Many states have adopted them. Many states haven't, and so I wouldn't support a federal right-to-work law, but I believe those are decisions that should be made at the state level.
What should the relationship be between governments and their employee unions?
Well, the federal government doesn't have a whole lot of public sector employees, but the state government does. And again, these are issues that really do belong in the state venue to discuss it. But look, I mean, we want people that work and are public servants to be paid well. At the same time, we have to understand there is limits to what the federal and, frankly, state government can afford. And Illinois has found itself in a situation right now where, honestly, it's just unable to make the paychecks. It's unable to pay the pension, and something has got to be done at the state level. I'll leave that to the state folks to debate, but I'll tell you, we need to hold our state folks accountable to ensure that they're really tackling this problem, or one day public sector employees like my mother, who's a school teacher, is going to get a note in the mail instead of her pension check that says, sorry, there's just no money.
Turning to energy, what course should the United States take on domestic energy?
Well, look, when it comes to natural gas, we've been called the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. With new drilling ways that we have called fracking, we've begun to find that a lot of these wells that we thought were dry actually really only tapped into about 20% of the oil that they could produce. And hydraulic fracking has allowed us to it's actually been in existence for decades, but with horizontal drilling has allowed us to tap a lot of these resources. So look, we have a lot of oil in this country. Let's tap into it. I don't like the idea that when I fill up my car, a certain percent of that is going over to dictators overseas that don't like us. So let's do that, and at the same time, pursue alternatives. This is kind of an all-of-the-above thing, and we say all-of-the-above, but I really mean it. Let's find and hope that in 20, 30, 40 years we don't need oil anymore, but until we get to that point, we do, and we need it to be affordable. We're a country that thrives on transportation. Unlike Europe, where everything's very close, we thrive on transportation, and we thrive on that cheap energy. So we need it, and let's access it.
Well, natural gas, as you mentioned, it has become very cheap because of fracking. Of course, there have been some, can I use the phrase, collateral damage, wells, people saying that well water has become affected and other environmental issues that result from fracking. What role should the federal government play in making fracking and the production of natural gas safe without these consequences?
Well, you can use the term collateral damage. The truth is, when the EPA was asked to provide evidence of collateral damage and fracturing in fracking, they were unable to provide anything. And actually, the EPA was quite embarrassed by the fact that they made the accusations and then were unable to show any example where actually groundwater was polluted by that. In fact, in some cases, it's been suggested that in one of the cases a few years ago that the well was actually polluted naturally anyway. And so, you know, it's not a huge issue like some people would like to believe because they oppose fossil fuels. But look, the federal government should have adequate oversight, but really when it comes to determining fracking, again, this is a state-level issue, and states should be able to set up their own laws and regulations with regards to how they want their energy harvested and how they want their energy produced. If they don't believe in fracking, well, that's a state right, but if they do, they should be able and allowed to set those measures up on their own.
Let's turn to social issues. How should the federal government deal with abortion rights?
Well, look, I'm pro-life. I believe that life begins at conception, and I would support pro-life measures. I have while I've been in Congress, and I'll continue to. Again, a lot of these issues, though, are very much debated on the state level. You see some states that come forward with parental notification, some that don't, and I believe that system is working well at this point. But look, I'm pro-life, and I'll vote for pro-life causes with some exceptions. And so, I think that's where I stand, and that's what I believe.
You mentioned some exceptions. What are those?
I take the rape, incest, and life of the mother exception to abortion, same as President Bush and Ronald Reagan.
What role should the federal government have regarding marriage?
Well, look, I support the federal marriage law, which basically governs federal areas and saying that, you know, marriage should be between a man and a woman. But I don't support a constitutional ban on gay marriage because I believe the Constitution should be used for very big issues, and frankly, that, you know, something like that doesn't necessarily belong in the Constitution of the United States. So, once again, these are all issues that are really dictated on the state level. I support them being on the state level, and you know, let states make their decision on that basis. I don't think it's an area where the federal government needs to come in and dictate to states what they do.
Turning to foreign policy, what foreign policy issues do you see as paramount for the U.S.?
It's a couple of things. Terrorism's in the nearest future. What we see is something we're dealing with in a big way today. And I think it's important that America, though we're tired of war, and, you know, as a veteran myself and still serving in the military, I can tell you we're tired of it, but we also want to win. So we need to defeat terrorism. You can't defeat them by bombing them all. We need to continue to work with moderate countries around the world, and especially in the Middle East, to begin to ensure that we're getting a message out of peace and freedom and prosperity to young people who are the prime targets in madrasas for terrorists. It's interesting when you see really the head of terrorist organizations, similar to Osama bin Laden. He was unwilling to fight himself, but he's sure willing to send a bunch of young men into combat to blow themselves up and take out innocent people. Terrorism's the most immediate. The rise of China is something we ought to be very concerned with. China is challenging our leadership in the Pacific. They're challenging our leadership, frankly, in Latin America. And it's important that if the United States wants to continue to lead the world as we should, we have to be ready to challenge China, not necessarily militarily, but willing and ready to have the equipment necessarily to do it so that we can continue to maintain our leadership around the world. And I think another area is you've seen a resurgent Russia, and I think Russia is a strategic threat into the future, one we ought to continue to engage with them on, but understand that, you know, when Russia violates nuclear treaties or continues to occupy Georgia, a country south of it, without any intention of negotiating Georgian sovereignty. These are all things we ought to be concerned with and keep an eye on them. And when you see the Russians, frankly, supplying weapons to the regime in Syria, it's a big deal and something that they need to be engaged on the global level.
I'd like to follow up on China for a minute. China is not only a foreign policy issue, but it's also, an economic issue here in the United States. Governor Mitt Romney has called China a currency manipulator. Do you agree with that statement by Governor Romney?
Oh, I think everybody agrees with that statement. There's no doubt the Chinese manipulate their currency in order to make their goods more affordable and ours less affordable to them. There are ways to fight this in the World Trade Organization. You know, one of the questions I have is, you know, I think we've put ourselves at a disadvantage in the past of admitting China to the WTO, but now that they are, we do have options to fight any kind of dumping, illegal dumping they're doing into our economy and currency manipulation. Would we be successful in fighting that? That's a difficult question, but I think it's a battle worth taking on through the WTO.
Right. This next question is about you. What sets you apart as the best choice for your district?
Well, look, I'm not doing this job because I want a title. I'm not doing this job for a paycheck. I'm very passionate about the future of our country. As somebody that's been to, you know, overseas and in combat, and frankly, all around the world, I see what America represents and what Americans in the uniform, what it means to people that don't have freedom. And I know that a powerful economy is very important to the United States, continuing to be a leader around the world, bringing freedom and an example to the rest of the world, because I've seen it firsthand. So I come with a background in the military and a background in understanding what the United States means, even outside of the United States. But beyond that, I understand that my job as a congressman is not to be an expert in all areas at all times. You understand that you're a representative. So in areas where I don't necessarily have firsthand experience, the key is to surround yourself with people that do and take their input. for instance, in medicine, I'm not a doctor, but I do talk to a lot of doctors, and each one of them, bar none, are concerned about the new health care law, and they tell us exactly why. It's important to hear from people like that. So I continue to maintain accessibility and talk to folks and learn. And frankly, I have a great vision for the future of this country. I believe in the future of this country. I believe in the 16th district. I believe in Illinois. And, you know, in having that belief, it's important to take that to Congress.
Final question. What other issues do you see as important to the district, the state, and the nation?
Well, when it comes to the district and state specifically, we've got very bad government in Springfield. We've raised taxes. We've raised taxes on businesses. We saw businesses leave Illinois at even a faster pace. And you know what? Raising taxes does push people out of the state. And frankly, I'd like to bring some good folks back into Illinois. I'd love to bring businesses back into Illinois. We used to be number one and number two on economic lists around the country, and now we're in some cases 48 and 49 and 50. We find ourselves in massive debt, both in the state and in the federal government. People need to understand how serious this is and how this is, in essence, going to be a very big debt crisis coming unless we make some tough leadership decisions right now. So I think deficit, debt, jobs, obviously, energy issues, American leadership around the world, these are all very important things, and I think these are the main issues people are really focusing on. And so that's going to be my focus, and, you know, as in the last 2 years of Congress, the next 2 years I will be doing everything I can to ensure that our district succeeds and that we get some good-paying jobs back here.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger, thank you very much for your time today.
Wonderful talking to you. Thanks.